Well, good morning. Well, yeah, it's still morning. Yeah, still morning. Yeah, a little bit. Morning when I start preaching. Afternoon when I finish preaching. Something like that. It's good to be back in San Marcos and be with the Steele family, the Promised Land family. The area of good barbecue. I figured it out. I was sitting there on the front row, and I know that you guys have got a new campus started there. That was the best excuse you could find for starting a campus where barbecue was born. That's the only thing I know. Is that in Lockhart, the place? That's the pilgrimage on the road to barbecue or something like that. I'm from Louisiana. That's where all Christians have to pass through in order to go to heaven. I'm going to give you some, there's 10 commandments, and then there's the 11 commandments and a few others. Well, here's an 11th commandment. Do not eat Cajun food outside of Louisiana. I got some amens there. Well, unless it's cooked by a Cajun who got sentenced to exile into Texas or something like that. One of the other things is you shouldn't eat barbecue in New York. I've tried it. There are worse things in life. I just can't remember them. Barbecue is just Texas, right? And this area is famous for barbecue. Barbecue and my grandson, Robin Steele. We're kind of talking about that video and how old it made him feel. And then he started talking about me. So if it made him feel old, the only thing I know to do is call him my grandson. But I'm proud to be a grandfather. That's all I can say. This is a church that stole one of my travel assistants from me. The ever hip Harry Fleming. And then you planted him to South Austin, where all hipsters go. And so, I mean, we have history here. I don't know if you know this, but Kenneth Phillips was in my mom and dad's wedding. Did you know that? And that goes back to I live in Alexandria, Louisiana, which is where the Phillips are from. That's not where I'm from. That's just where I chose to be. Our family roots are actually from south of New Orleans. Most people don't know that there's anything south of New Orleans. Well, there used to be land, and it keeps disappearing, but that's where we're from. And we've spread out. I apologize for, I was supposed to be here with you last Sunday on Father's Day. And sort of a kaleidoscope of events conspired to keep me from it, the biggest of which I suffered the loss of my father. And he passed on the previous, actually just about 7 days before I was supposed to be here, or 9 days I believe it would have been, So that would have been my first Sunday preaching, my first Father's Day. And that's a tough Sunday for anybody. But I have to tell you that we don't grieve as others. I didn't say we don't grieve. We just don't grieve as others. That means that we are not hopeless. We have hope. And we have light at the end of the tunnel. And God is on our side. Tell somebody next to you, God's on your side. Even if you have to live in Texas and you can't live in Louisiana, God's still on your side. But Jeannie and I are really excited, happy to just come back and hang out with you guys. I love what's going on here. I like the energy. I'm not sure whether we're going fishing or hunting, but I'm down with all of it. And super excited about having my wife with me. She doesn't always travel with me. Do you know, this is a special place because my wife, she's pretty much retired from traveling. I travel, and about 60 to 70% of my travel is overseas. I've got spiritual sons around the world. I go to Paris at least two times a year, sometimes more than that. They will pay her plane fare, business class, put her in five-star hotels, the finest food. She won't go to Paris, not even with her husband. But look where she is, San Marcos, Texas. She said, I've been to Paris. I've been there many times. I don't need to go anymore. But something about San Marcos, I don't know. Oh, it's actually me. She enjoyed spending the hours cooped up. Why do women wait until they get you in the car going 70 miles an hour to start asking you questions? It's because they're smart. And one of the things that my wife and I used to dread is the long hours of travel. Now we found out we don't run out of things to talk about, and we've been married 44 years. It's amazing. She's the coolest, hippest grandmother that Robin Steele will ever have. You have your Bibles today, or your iPads, or your iPhones, or your apostolic Androids, whatever this hip church uses. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21, where I want to kind of hang my hat. This is a super theological chapter. I don't want to intimidate you by saying that, but if you really want to study the Bible, not just read the Bible. And I read the Bible sometimes, and I study the Bible. But if you want to study a chapter, this is a good chapter to study. So, and by the way, before I forget, I have some books back there for some of you. I want to explain there. When I say study and read, that's what made me think of it. Sometimes you want to eat a full meal, and sometimes you just want a snack. Is that right? So, you know, I've written books that are, you know, like this. This is a good book. This you study. I don't know. Maybe 200 something pages. That's good to study with, but sometimes you just want a snack. And so then we have these little snack size things. And so you can say you've read a book. Get credit for it. But it encapsulates some of the same basic things just in distilled language. But I do want to tell you, I did not shoplift these from Walmart. Even though it says up here, Walmart price. Walmart bought a bunch of these from us, and they bought too many, and they said, we would like to sell them back to you. And I said, well, that just depends. I want to make money off of you. So I will only buy them back cheaper than you bought them from me. You know, if you can make money off Walmart, you're doing pretty good. And so if you see this price, now we did not go through and pull the price tags off. But what we did is we roll back the price. That's cheesy, isn't it? It's just really... Because Walmart, we could only sell them for $6.87, but because I beat them at their own game. I mean, that's my books. I guess I can do that. Like, what does that mean? My books are cheap? I better stop saying that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's $5. Or actually, we could say the book is free and the autograph is $5. Any way you want to do it. Also, there's been some school shootings lately, and one of my pastor's daughters, and the one of, I guess what you'd call it, the watershed moments of school shootings, maybe coming up on, not 20 years, but at least 15, the Columbine, 1999, you're right. My grandson's got a good memory. My memory's going, son. Sorry. Rachel Scott and her father was pastor from Louisiana, and she was a martyr in that. And after her death, they found her journal. And another pastor friend of mine helped put it into perspective. And sometimes there's more going on and all of these shootings, and you know, we are in a struggle, the kingdom of light versus the kingdom of darkness. And the only real winner in the end is going to be Christ and his kingdom. And I choose to be on that team. How about you? But this might help you understand it, and even for some of those that are in at that age, I did not want you to think that this is a book that I wrote, but just wanted to bring it along. We've this summer included that in Corinthians 2 or 2 Corinthians chapter 5 verse 21. Last night as we were talking, my grandson and I, your pastor, Robin Steele, I was asking him, where's the church? What's going on? And he was talking to me about, you know, different things and how things were going. And he was telling me a particular church series. Now, the backstory is, obviously, you know, I was scheduled to be here on Father's Day, and I'd prepared to speak particular things that would have been appropriate for Father's Day. And then now this is the week after that, and I asked him what's going on in the life of the church, and he said, well, we're in a series called Disqualified, maybe just starting it, and he said, don't feel like you have to follow that theme, but just that's where we are, and that's kind of what's going on. Last night, I was up and down kind of all night long, but as he mentioned something to me about Disqualified, and how it's following a theme, I mean, if you're looking for people who've been disqualified, the Bible's a really good place to start. Because if you ever get, sort of, you feel like, they got that discipleship class they were talking about, and you feel like, oh, I'll never be one of those, I can't be one of the New Testament. You ever really feel like I'll never be a disciple? Reread the Gospels. Those guys were losers. I mean, like, they were over here when Jesus needed them over there. They would be asleep when he needed them awake. They didn't even get his jokes. This is the truth. He would tell stories to the sort of unchurched, you know. He would tell stories. We called them parables, but he would walk into the town markets, and you know, even the kids would gather around and tell stories. He would tell stories to them, and they would get it. But then the disciples later that night, you read it in the Gospels, they would ask him, what did that mean? That's our leaders. The kids got it. The undiscipled got it. But the disciples. So if you ever just feel like, I don't measure up, I'm disqualified, join the club. It's a big club. And church is certainly not for the perfected few. It's for those of us who choose to just keep working on ourselves. Now, when he told me about that, and I tucked it away, but throughout the night, little bits and pieces kind of kept bubbling to the surface in my heart, my mind. And before you knew it this morning, I knew what I needed to talk to you about. I'm going to talk to you about probably the most unlikely of all the characters in the Bible who was disqualified. That's Jesus. Jesus, who was uniquely disqualified. 2 Corinthians 5:21, and I'm going to read it the way it is, and then we're going to read it in a couple of different... I'm going to read it the Tommy Tenney version. I want to make sure you get absolutely an understanding of how you can live the disqualified life. I'm reading from King James. It says, for he... In this respect, it's talking about God or the Father, made him, that's talking about Jesus Christ, to be sin for us, who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. For he made him to be sin for us, who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. See, this whole chapter in Corinthians is full of real theological language. Like, two verses earlier, there's a word in there, imputed. I bet in that WAVE conference at my friend Joe Champion's church, I bet the number one word at that conference that just all the young people were talking about was imputed. Oh, that was like their favorite word. That's like the new hip term, imputed, right? Because we don't even use that. It's just like so big and theological and like, what in the world is imputed? It is kind of sort of deep. Do you know that the Bible had to invent language to explain concepts that were so powerful and beautiful that They had to make up words. Don't look so innocent. You make up words. My wife's father was one of the greatest for making up words. He looked outside one day, lived in St. Louis. He said, "It's sneeting." I said, "I beg your pardon?" He said, "Yes, look, it's sneeting." I didn't know what sneeting was. That means when it's snowing and sleeting together. Been a part of my dictionary ever since. It's sneeting. He had other words. He was of an older generation where they liked their churches with stained glass and brightly lit, where now the churches are sort of dark because we use a lot of screens and it allows you to see things. And actually, these are now our stained glass and allow you to see things. But in his day, he would walk into places like this and he would say, when it's dim, he had a word, dinsy. The first time I heard it, I knew that's a word. It was only years later I decided to look it up. And look, I'm a writer. I've written 38 books. It's not a word. But he's so good at making them up that he could just sell you on the word. It's just a word. And you immediately, okay, I get it. Like when I say Denzi, you get it, right? How many of you are going to use that word now? Come on, admit it. Right, you're going to use that. Denzi, or sneeting. Does it sneet in San Marcos? Never? Oh, didn't know that. In the language of the Promised Land, when they walked into the beautiful, bountiful place that was the Promised Land, the spies came back and were trying to describe to the rest of them who barely survived a trip across hot, searing sand. How do we explain to them what this place is like? They made up phrases. This is a place that flows with milk and honey. Somebody made it up. They made it up, and we've been using it ever since. Why? Because it works. When you say it flows with milk and honey, everybody knows, no, there's not a river of milk. And there's not so many bees that it's a river. But what it was saying to those people is, there are so many cows here. If you milk them, and that's also telling them that's so much green pasture land. It's the language that explains something. So sometimes these words that seem big, like in Corinthians, like imputing, and these words like he made sin, and how is all this? What is he really trying to do? It's pretty simple. Jesus became uniquely disqualified. God made him to be sin for us. The Bible uses the word, he imputed unto us righteousness. Oh, this is good. I figured this out. Come up here, grandson. Yep. Need I say anything else? Do you know that the Bible, when it talks about Samson, it says that the strength of God, literally, this was Samson, and God put Samson on. And suddenly, if this jacket without, man, he's got some cannons in here. This jacket without him in here, it's nothing. Put him in it, it's got form, function, strength, and power. Samson without God was nothing. God just put Samson on, and everybody said, wow, Samson is strong. No, God is strong. He just put Samson on. Okay, so same subject. Wait, we're going to do it again. So, imputing. Robin's a good guy, but as good as he is, he's not the righteousness of God. But when God imputes, he puts on. And that means a boy can wear a man's suit. They give me the pink microphone anyway. Thank you.
Yes.
You love Pastor? Don't you love him? I could have talked all about imputing, put this on, put that on, but you get it. So God said, I'm going to put something on you that really wasn't yours. He puts it on. So literally, read it this way. For God made Christ to be sin for us. He imputed, he put sin on Jesus. And that's a cool phrase, the way it says, he made him to be sin. Say it with me that way. Say, to be sin. He didn't say that he made Jesus sin. Okay, so in order for all this theology to work, we're going to have to make Jesus go sin. No, Jesus did not sin. He didn't go murder somebody. He didn't go think bad thoughts. He didn't start doing these things. No, literally what God did is he took all of the dirty deeds of humanity and he put it on Jesus. And made him to be sin, who it says he knew no sin. He didn't even know sin's address. He didn't know where sin lived. He was innocent. He had no idea of sin, but God put sin on him. Do you wonder why Jesus cried on the crucifixion? Why have you forsaken him? He had never known what it was like for one moment in his life to feel guilty. And suddenly, he feels guilty of every murder, every dirty deed that Hitler ever did, every vile, despicable act of racism, everything that humanity has ever done. And Jesus said, I mean, how many of you have ever done something you felt bad about it afterwards? Well, you are some hard-hearted people here. I want to tell you the truth. I asked a question. Three people said, yeah, I felt bad about it afterwards. we need to pray. Or maybe I'll ask, how many of you have ever done something you felt bad about it afterwards? I mean, just really feel, oh man, shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that, shouldn't have eaten that, shouldn't have gone there. Said, you know, we just live. Jesus had never, ever felt any of that, and suddenly he felt all of it. Just like they put the jacket on, and he said, oh my, it hurt. It literally was vileness on him. And then it says, he knew no sin. that we may be made the righteousness of God. He became sin. So in the terms of what you guys have been learning about being disqualified, Jesus was supremely qualified. If anybody ever passed the smell test, it was him. And then suddenly he becomes disqualified. You don't go to heaven. You don't go anywhere. Do you know that God Himself turned His face away from Jesus? Wouldn't even look at Him. And Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? He who knew no sin became sin. So he became incredibly disqualified. I've used all of this theology to kind of bring you down to the last few minutes here of how I think, which is pretty simple. I like to follow NASCAR, Formula One. If it's sports, I like it. Do you know at the beginning of every NASCAR race, every car, they have a carbon fiber kit it's like a pattern. They pass it across the car. If this is the nose of the car, that's the tail of the car. They sweep the car across it like this, sideways. That means the car can't be too tall. The nose can't be too tall. That means every car, I don't care what color it is, who's driving it, I don't care what the sponsorship, I don't care how much money they spent in it, it can't be any longer than this, it can't be any taller than that, the nose can't be here, the tires have to be like that, everything, even the engine has to be the same. Heaven help us if one engine can't make too much power. The fuel tanks have to all be the same, down to the last ounce. They all have to be the same. And even what's more interesting is after the race, this is what really blew my mind. Every car is measured like that in the pre-qualifications before the race. But the winners, like first, second, third place, they have to pass the qualifications again after the race. Why? Because, those mechanic guys, they might put a little extra downforce in the front. They might put an extra little wing here in the back. They might crank this up. They might do that. Why? Because we will do anything to win. Can I tell you something? Winning is not always about coming in first. You can have the fastest time and lose the race by being disqualified. And that is what happens when they mess up and they say, we measured your car before the race, and after the race it was different. They get suspended, all kinds of penalties. You know that when the Kentucky Derby was just won, we just had the Preakness, the Kentucky Derby, and the Belmont Stakes, and we had a Triple Crown winner. Do you know when those horses finish the race and they're on their cool-down lap, there's already a vial of their blood that's being raced to a veterinarian's laboratory in field to be tested to make sure that somebody didn't juice the horse up with something right before he got in the stall. Why? Because that meant he may have won by a nose, but he lost by a needle. Athletes are now finding out that it's one thing to have their name in the record books, but they have an asterisk by it. The asterisk says they were on some, what do they call it, performance-enhancing steroids. Yeah, you got it. In other words, they might have hit the most home runs, but something's not right about all that. I don't want to be the kind of person who looks like they win at life but lose because of my reputation. Even right, bronze, silver, and gold Olympic champions are now ushered immediately into a room that has greater security than a presidential detail. Why? Because of the Sochi Olympics and the Russian host. The age of innocence is over. It's sacrificed on the altar of corruption. Why? Because it's one thing to win the race, but it's another thing to be disqualified afterwards. Do you know that Jesus, not only did he finish the race, it used to be that cheating could only be proven after weeks or months. I know we live here, you're close to Austin. No one will ever trust a winner again in the age of Lance Armstrong. Why? Blood doping. Say it with me, blood doping. That means good blood, pure blood, substituted for tainted with and tampered blood. Kind of sounds like what Jesus did, don't it? Good blood, pure blood, exchanged with, tainted with, tampered with blood. So the qualified, the only one in the universe that was ever really qualified to win the human race. That's what it's called, right? The human race. Ask somebody next to them, do they belong to, are they in the human race? Are they in the human race? Pretty much everybody today, you look like you are. If not, check your vet. We're in the human race. Do you know the only one that was ever qualified to win the human race? He exchanged his blood for our corrupt blood, so that it proved the principle that our corrupt blood could be exchanged for his pure blood. And he who knew no sin became sin. And we who did not know righteousness became righteousness. They threw him out of the race, literally. They threw him out of the human race, but he won anyway. You see, Satan thought he won. Oh, I didn't have time to read this verse to you, but I'm going to quote it to you. Can you trust me? I can quote a few scriptures. Okay, it says this: but Satan, if he had known that he was crucifying the Lord of glory, he would not. He thought he was winning by doing all of that, and it came down to it, and he said, if I had known, I wouldn't have done that. And Jesus looked like he was disqualified. You're out. And then when the results came back in, he actually won. And he rose from the grave. And because he won, guess what? We get to win. And there, actually, the only way you can lose is if you quit. You cannot lose if you do not quit. So I'm not sure what you're facing, and I'm not sure what you're dealing with here in life, but I can tell you this. You are not disqualified. You're not disqualified from having a good marriage. You're not disqualified from going to heaven. You're not disqualified from being a part of the Promised Land Church. You're not disqualified from doing anything. Nothing can be withheld from you. Why? Because the only one who was ever qualified for anything said, I figured this out. I'm going to switch all this around. I'll take the sin part. My grandson, sometimes when he comes home from school, I'm not sure whether he comes home from school or the school play yard comes home with him because there's so much dirt. Do you know that Jesus never played dirty, but he got dirty because they put dirt on him? And then you and I, who have known nothing but dirt, he has put the righteousness on us. And so you are clean and you are pure because of blood doping. You're not disqualified, you're qualified. You win. Tell somebody next to you, you win. I want to pray for you today. I want to lift that spirit of disqualification that makes you feel like you are not a winner. You are a winner. By the blood of Jesus Christ, you're a winner. He imputed, it's a big word, he put it on you. I speak it right now. Father, I speak the blood of Christ on my friends, my brothers, my sisters here. Everybody that feels like a failure here today, God, take that jacket off of them and put the jacket of success on them. Take the jacket of guilt and the loser, the big L that's on their forehead, and lift it off of them and put a W on their life. Jesus became disqualified so that we can win the race. I thank you for that. Thank you for the blood of Jesus and for what it's done in our lives today and for what it's going to do in the lives and the hearts of people right here in San Marcos, in this church, in our lives today.